Good evening. As Pastor said, this summer I'll be moving out to Alliance, Nebraska, and this what I'm going to be doing is starting to do ministry with Brother Don Mink out there. And Don Mink is probably pretty familiar to most of you here at First Church. We've supported him in Faith Promise for probably upwards of 10 years, Kim, something like that, maybe more. And there's been several mission trips out there, and a lot of people even here maybe have been out there to do mission work. But I'd like to thank Pastor Nathan again for allowing me to speak to you tonight. But Brother Mink has been doing ministry in Alliance for nearly 50 years with the Native American community, and unfortunately, he's getting to the point to where he can't do ministry very well anymore. His age is not allowing him to. Brother Mink will be 81 in July, and his wife, Sister Mink, is 85. And with their age growing, their health problems have been growing. And Brother Mink is having quite a few memory problems. Sister Mink is actually developing macular degeneration in her eyes and can't see very well at all anymore. But this summer, I'll be going out there to come alongside them and to help Brother Mink, along with Sister Linda Abel, the assistant pastor at the church, in ministry. And the plan for the future is then for me to kind of take over at the church as the senior pastor once they aren't able to do ministry anymore. And their responsibilities, Brother Mink and Sister Linda, their responsibilities at the church include preaching on Sunday mornings. They have Bible study on Wednesday evenings. They don't actually have a youth program right now, but they do have a children's ministry that they do on Sunday mornings. And actually, the children, they read to them from one of the story Bibles in the service on Sunday mornings. That's kind of neat to see. But along with those, one of the other major ministry responsibilities that they have is just simply driving people around place to place. And for those of you that have been out to Alliance, you know Brother Mink wasn't around very much because he was always out driving people around. And so driving's one of the biggest parts of their ministry, actually. And they take people to work in the mornings. Many of the Native community there in Alliance don't have vehicles. They just simply can't afford them. And so they get up every morning about 5 o'clock and start taking people to work. And Alliance, the population is not very large. And because of that, they do not have a school system bus service. The cost just, it's just too much of a cost for the population there. And they also, because of that, take kids to school in the mornings. Now, in addition to that, they pick those people up in the evenings, the kids from school in the afternoon and people from work. But they also take people to the gas station if they need, you know, to get gas for their lawnmower. They take people to the grocery store. And it's very hectic. It's hard to plan ahead because most of the time the way that they're contacted is, Brother Mink, yes, I need you to take me to the gas station. Or, I need you to take me over to the grocery store to get some milk. Okay, I'll be there in 10 minutes. And so that's how the ministry works out there a lot of times. And so because of that, it's pretty hard to plan ahead. The driving, as I said, is a major part of their ministry. In fact, they average about 90 to 100 miles a day on each vehicle, Brother Mink and Sister Linda. So that's around 200 miles a day between the two of them, just driving. And they transport between 30 and 35 people a day, in fact. And that's just average. Some days it's less. There are days that it's more, depending on how many kids they have to take to school. But when we were out there on a mission trip with the youth group back in 2012, many of you may have been on that mission trip. Brother Mink was driving a Ford 15-passenger van, and many of you may remember that van. Well, when we were out there, I found out it had 364,000 miles on it, and it was 6 years old. And when I was on another trip out to Alliance in 2014, The van had over 530,000 miles on it. And he had, in fact, traded it in on another van at that time. But 8 years old and 530,000 miles on the vehicle. So a lot of driving, as you can see out there. But as I mentioned, they drive people around because they simply can't afford a vehicle, many of them. And it serves as a big outreach for their ministry, because I would say on average probably between 5 and 8 people that they transport each day are active in the church. The rest of them are not active in the church at all, really. And so that serves as a good outreach opportunity for their ministry out there. But one of the reasons they transport these people is that they would rather them be able to hold down a job. For instance, I said they transport people to work. They would rather them be able to hold down a job than rely on the mission church for money. So they're willing to take people to work for that reason. But Alliance is not actually on the reservation there. It's actually about 50 miles south of the reservation. The reservation is the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, and some of you may be familiar with that reservation. That's the reservation they primarily do work on if they're on the reservation, which is a couple of times a week, about 3 to 4 times a week generally. Again, it's always subject to change. If somebody calls and says, hey, I need to go to a doctor's appointment. Okay, what time's your doctor's appointment? Well, it's in 30 minutes, and it takes an hour to get there. So that's pretty common. They run on what they refer to as Indian time, which is about a half hour late for everything. But the tribe that they mostly do work with is the Lakota Sioux tribe. Now, the Lakota tribe was one of the Great Plains tribes, and they went down fighting when the government was putting them on the reservations. And because of that, there's a lot of resentment and a lot of tension between the different cultures. And they're very, they're not open at all to outsiders at all, really. And Brother Mink has been doing ministry with them for so long, though, that they trust him and they respect him. In fact, they hold Brother Mink in as high esteem as they do any of the members of their tribal council. And so Brother Mink is very well respected. Anywhere on the reservation, if you mention his name, people know who he is. And so he's very well respected and very well loved by the native people. Because of that, it will make the trust-building process much easier when I start assisting them in ministry. And with his approval, in a way, and his support of my ministry, it will help that trust-building process and help people to accept me more. And because they know that Brother Mink's not going to do anything that's going to hurt them. And that's one of the big reasons they trust him. The reservation is very sparsely populated, and it's sparsely populated in population, but as well as in employment opportunities. And because of that, a lot of people actually move off the reservation down to places like Alliance. And there's also a lack of infrastructure on the reservation. You have to know the right people to get a job, and most of the jobs that are on the reservation would be in healthcare or in the government offices. So there's not a very big variety, and as I mentioned, you have to know the right person. And then a couple of years down the road, when the tribal elections happen, you can always be removed from that position. So lack of infrastructure, lack of employment opportunities, and just a general lack of population is a lot of the reason that there's not as many people on the reservation that they're doing ministry to. Most of their ministry is focused in Alliance, Nebraska, where their mission church is at. One of the big problems, though, on the reservation is alcohol. And some of you may be familiar with that, and the alcohol rate on the reservation is approximately 70% of the population on the reservation. And because of that, there's a lot of fetal alcohol syndrome. The stillborn baby rate is, I believe, over 85%, of the infants born there in the reservation hospital. And so it's very sad. It's a very big problem with their culture. But with that, there's also a lot of domestic violence and a lot of abuse that occurs on the reservation. And in fact, when I was on a trip out to Alliance doing some work with the Minks, I actually got a phone call. I was at the house and got a phone call, and it was a lady, and she said that her husband was beating her and her kids. He had drank quite a bit, and he was beating them, and I had to actually go pick them up and take them to a hotel. So it's a very big problem that they had to deal with. White Clay, Nebraska, I don't know if any of you are familiar with that. Some of you have maybe been through White Clay that were on the mission trip. White Clay, Nebraska is a town that's population is 14 permanent residents. And there's over 4 million cans of beer there sold every year. And White Clay is actually right on the state line between Nebraska and South Dakota. And because of that, the native people will drive across the state line. It's only about a mile away from the central government offices and such of the reservation. So a lot of people actually drive to White Clay and purchase their alcohol. And so, like I said, very big problem, the alcohol there on the reservation and with that culture. One of the ways the natives support themselves that don't have a job is by making beadwork, and such as this bolo tie. And it's made out of leather and out of glass beads, actually. And so that's one of the main ways that a lot of people will support themselves. In fact, in Alliance, and some of you may have purchased from it, they have what they call the Revolving Bead Fund. And the Revolving Bead Fund essentially is where somebody will come to Brother Mink or Sister Linda at the mission church and will have pieces of beadwork, jewelry they've made, maybe earrings, a necklace, a bolo tie. I got this actually out of the Revolving Bead Fund. I believe it was $20, I believe, is what I paid for it. And so people will bring that to them, and they'll say, I need $15 for this pair of earrings. Will you buy it from me? So they'll give them the money, and they'll put that beadwork jewelry in this big suitcase. It's about that deep, about that wide. And when groups come in, such as ours has, and do vacation Bible school and work camps, then they will sell that beadwork back to those groups. They get that money and they put it back in that benevolence fund. So it's called the Revolving Bead Fund because that money just keeps going back to the fund. So that's just one of the ways that they support themselves, a lot of the natives that don't have a job. Talking about Alliance a little bit, Alliance is not a very big place. Alliance is approximately 9,000 people, and they have a Kmart. They have a they have two hardware stores, a farm store, and four fast food restaurants. And that's Alliance. And the whole county that Alliance is in, I believe the population is actually just a hair smaller than Greenville, in fact. The nearest town to Alliance is Scotts Bluff, Nebraska. And Scotts Bluff is actually an hour drive away. You know, here we're used to, if we were going from Greenville to Johnson City, we'll pass through Tusculum, we'll pass through Afton, through Chucky, through Limestone, through Telford, Jonesboro, and then on into Johnson City. Well, out in Nebraska, it's Alliance and then Sand Hills for an hour. And the next closest place is Scotts Bluff. As I said, it's an hour away. So it's a very different landscape out there, very different than it is here. As I mentioned, we took a mission trip out to Alliance in 2012 with the youth group, and I had just finished my junior year in high school when we were on that mission trip, and then I actually went back in 2014. I decided I had felt the call to ministry, and I decided that I wanted to pursue an internship with Brother Mink. So I went on that internship, and I stayed out with Brother Mink for about 4 weeks. Through the month of June, and then met the youth group back at International Youth Convention in Nashville that year. And this past spring, the spring of 2015, I just really started feeling that the Lord was saying, you know, you're going to be doing this. This is the ministry that you're going to be doing, Native American ministry. I was like, that's a big step. So I began to pray about it a little bit and begin to converse with the Lord on that. And a couple of months later, I still felt the same way. I felt like the Lord was saying, you're going to be going to do mission work with Brother Mink and Sister Linda in Alliance. And so I called Sister Linda, and it was just the way the Lord works. I called her, and I said, this is what I feel the Lord telling me to do, to come out there and do mission work with y'all. She said, well, that's pretty funny. She said, Brother Mink and I were this morning at breakfast talking about who was going to come out and replace us in the ministry. So that was pretty neat to see just how the Lord worked there. But with that being said, I'll be moving out to Alliance this summer in July, and my responsibilities there will be preaching occasionally on Sundays, as well as I'll be starting the youth group back up through some situations with some hurt and a lot of people leaving the church. They don't have a youth group anymore, so they have two youth-aged kids. One is 12 and one's 13, and so I'll be starting that program back up. I'll also be working with a program called Young Life, and some of you may be familiar with that program. Young Life is kind of a community-based youth program. Volunteers from different churches assist with that. So it's not restricted to a certain organization or affiliation. And so I'll be assisting with that ministry and probably leading worship with that. I'll be leading worship on Sunday mornings for the main services at the Mission Church as well. And any maintenance or repair work, mowing, things like that that need to be done at the Mission Church. With that being known, though, Brother Mink, because of the hectic ministry schedule, is not able to work a job, even a part-time job, because he would miss out on all of his ministry opportunities to serve people. And because that, he's lived off faith for many years, he and Sister Linda. And I'll be actually living off faith as well, and I'll be finishing my degree up with Johnson Bible College. I just finished with Walter State this spring and graduated from there. I'll be pursuing a pastoral ministry degree with Johnson Bible College, soon to be Johnson Bible University, I believe, Dustin, right? Johnson University. And so I'll be finishing that degree with them, and but I'll be living off faith the same way Brother Mink and Sister Linda have for many years. But I would ask that you remember me in prayer, that you partner with me in prayer, because the Word tells us that nothing can be accomplished without prayer. And if you feel led, I would also ask you that you consider financially partnering with me as well. And there's a couple of different ways you can do that if you feel led and are interested. Those would be monthly support, one-time gifts, and those are listed on the back side of the handout if you were able to receive one of those before you came in. And also church donations, faith promise budgets, one-time gifts, love offerings, different things like that. But if you're interested, those are some different ways that you can pursue that. But I pray the Lord's blessings on you, and if you're interested, I'll be around after service to talk if you're interested. But now moving on to the Word this evening. You're probably wondering why a 20-year-old would want to move to Nebraska to live off faith and pursue mission work full-time in all of that chaos. And as Pastor Nathan said, he accused me of having found a woman out there, and that's not at all the case. I don't know if he's telling people that, but that's not true. So if you hear that, it's a lie. But so the reason that I'm actually going out there is because I feel the Lord saying, go, and I'm just being obedient to that. But that wasn't the case with King Saul in the Old Testament. And if you would, turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 13. Now, in this chapter, Saul has reigned as king of Israel for just about 2 years. So he doesn't have very much experience as king. And during this time, he had chose for himself an army of about 3,000 people. Now, that wasn't very big in comparison with some of the forces of the time. For example, the Philistine army. But nonetheless, he handpicked each individual person and then sent the rest of them home, it says in the word. And as I said, it's not a very big force, but he had handpicked them. The king had handpicked them. And they had God on their side. And they were victorious. But Saul took 2,000 of these men with him, and then he sent 1,000 of these men with his son Jonathan. Well, Jonathan attacked the Philistines, a garrison of the Philistines, and as a result of this conflict, the Philistines actually rallied an army together to come attack Israel and put down the Hebrew revolt. So the Philistines amassed an army that was far superior, not just in number, than Israel, but far superior in weapons and in technology of the time. And as a result of this conflict, King Saul disobeyed God, and he essentially lost the favor of God as king of Israel. So let's pick it up in verse 6 of 1 Samuel chapter 13 there. Again, verse 6 of chapter 13. It says, "When the men of Israel saw that they were in danger, for the people were distressed, then the people hid in caves, in thickets, in rocks, in holes, and in pits. And some of the Hebrews crossed over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was still at Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. Then he waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So Saul said, 'Bring a burnt offering and peace offerings here to me.' And he offered the burnt offering. Now it happened, as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, that Samuel came and Saul went out to meet him, that he might greet him. And Samuel said, 'What have you done?' Saul said, 'When I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash, then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you.'" Now, it's hard not to sympathize with Saul in this passage. I mean, if you and I were in Saul's shoes, we probably would have done the same thing. And, you know, Saul had a force of 3,000 people. The Philistines, the word tells us, had 30,000 chariots alone. Now, chariots capable of carrying more than one person. He also had, the Philistines had 6,000 horsemen as cavalrymen. And it says in the word, they had as many people, infantrymen, as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. So you can see it's a very big force the Philistines had amassed to attack Israel. We also read that they're fearful. The people were fearful. The people were actually beginning to cross over the Jordan and to leave. The army was disbanding. And so Saul was looked to be the leader as his people are disbanding. And he's, you know, the people are saying, "I'm out of here, you know, have fun, you know, see you later. You know, we're not going to get killed over this. Look how many people they have." But, you know, Saul's being looked to be the leader. And so, you know, he has a tough decision to make. To top it all off, Samuel, who was the priest and who was the prophet of the Lord, who anointed Saul as king of Israel, had told him that he would come to him in 7 days to offer supplication, sacrifice to the Lord. And he didn't show up. Samuel was late for church. And, you know, for all Saul knew, Samuel could have been killed on his way to meet Saul. And he may have been waiting for somebody that wasn't ever going to show up because he was dead. See, the decision for Saul was either to wait for Samuel, who may not come, or to disobey his commandment from God and offer sacrifice, which was not his job. It wasn't his position. You see, when Saul offered sacrifice, he took on a position that wasn't his. That position was held for Samuel, for the priest, for the prophet of the Lord. And he was told and he was commanded by God to wait for Samuel. But Saul disobeyed and he went ahead and offered the sacrifice. But, you know, it's hard not to sympathize with him. I mean, if your army's, you know, only 3,000 people and, you know, you can see as many people, you know, as you can on the horizon there with the Philistine army, and your army's leaving, I mean, you'd probably make the same decision too. It's a hard decision. But it's hard not to sympathize with Saul for that. It's also hard, you know, for instance, not to sympathize with Robin Hood. Now, Robin Hood steals from the rich and he gives it to the poor. And, you know, it's hard not to sympathize with that. He gives it to people who are in need. You know, we probably wouldn't call Robin Hood a downright sinner for stealing from the rich and giving it to people who were in need. You know, in the same way, it's hard to look at Saul and say, you downright sinner, you know, you disobeyed the Lord. Well, his army's leaving. You know, people are disbanding. They're looking for him to be the leader. He doesn't have much experience as king. But, you see, Saul was in need of God's help for the battle. And he was afraid that he wouldn't be victorious if he didn't have sacrifices, supplication made to God. So it's hard not to sympathize with Saul for that reason. But oftentimes, we find ourselves in situations like Saul was in, where we're making excuses constantly. For instance, we make excuses for reasons not to tithe, to defend our reasons not to tithe, we make excuses. And we may say, you know, well, you don't understand. We're broke. We can't afford this. And, you know, it's hard not to sympathize with people who tell us that. You know, especially if we know more details about their situation. It's hard not to sympathize with them. But, you know, God establishes in the Word the biblical principle of tithing, a portion of our income back to the Lord. It's also, oftentimes we'll make excuses for, you know, our children. If we have children, we'll make excuses for them. For their misbehavior or, you know, for the way they react to situations. And we make excuses and we'll say, well, they just didn't get enough sleep last night. They're sick. They're not feeling well. Or, you know, maybe if you're a teacher, you don't understand. The teacher's just picking on them, being mean, you know, or for that matter, anyone who's an authority over them, you know, well, they're just being mean to them. They're singling them out, picking on them. And we make excuses for children's reactions in situations. Another place that we make excuses is when people sin. And one of the excuses a lot of people will make is, oh, well, nobody's perfect. And another excuse that people make is, you know, everybody makes mistakes. I hear that one all the time. But Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 48, he said, therefore, you shall be perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect. So, You know, we are expected to live a holy life, to not sin. Well, we constantly are making up excuses, but we're also casting blame on other people when we make those excuses a lot of times. We read in the passage, Saul says to Samuel, "Hey, this is your fault. You didn't show up in time. You didn't come when you told me you would. You said you'd be here in 7 days, and you didn't come in 7 days." Well, he says, "You didn't hold up your end of the bargain." So he disobeyed. He made the sacrifice. You see, Saul blamed the situation on Samuel. He said, "This is your fault. This isn't my fault." But, you see, that's just another excuse that we use oftentimes. You know, maybe at work, we're working on a project with an individual that we work with, a coworker, and maybe they don't do their part of the work on the project, and you don't meet the deadline. Well, what do we do? Oh, we did our part. We don't have any, you know, this isn't our problem. They didn't hold up their end of the bargain. They were supposed to do this part of the work. You know, I did my part. Well, that's just another excuse, too. You see, we act like we don't have any fault, but the truth is that we were involved, that we were part of the project. We should have been able to see it to completion. Well, Saul didn't just simply disobey in a sympathetic way. You see, Saul disobeyed. He was given an order from God, and he didn't follow it. He made excuses to defend his disobedience. He blamed it on Samuel. He even owns that it went against his conscience to make the sacrifice, to disobey. He says, "I felt compelled to offer the sacrifice when you did not come." Well, he disobeyed, but there was more than it. There was more to it than just that. Samuel says, "You have behaved foolishly." Now, in the dictionary, to be foolish means to lack sense, to lack foresight, to lack caution, or to be unwise. But in Psalms, we read a different meaning of foolish. And it says in Psalms chapter 14, verse 1, "The fool has said in his heart, 'There is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There's none who does good.'" So from this we can see that to behave foolishly means to act as if there's no God. And, you know, we may think that that's a crazy thought, considering all that God had brought Israel through at the time. You know, Saul's acting foolishly, acting as if there's no God. And yet, God brought the Israelites out of Egypt. He parted a sea for them. He led them through it on dry ground. And then he drowned the pursuing army, Egyptian army, in it and saved their lives. But, I mean, I guess this is just too big for God to handle, this situation. You know, there's too many Philistines. Well, you see, God had given the Israelites numerous victories. If you read in Joshua, you can read all the battles and all the victories that they had. And then they took the land as a reward, the people of Israel did. But, you know, this is just too big. This is too big of a situation for God to handle. Too many Philistines. And, you know, maybe there were just too many for the Israelites to be victorious this time in Saul's mind. So he behaved foolishly when he disobeyed because he acted as if there wasn't a God to help him through their troubles. You see, we often do the same thing, though. You and I act foolishly all the time. We act as if, you know, God can't help us with our situations. We don't put our faith and our trust in Him, and we lose our vision. We lose the vision of God, and we act foolishly when we do that. We act as if there's no God. Saul disobeyed, he behaved foolishly, but he also demonstrated that he didn't have a heart for God. Samuel says to Saul in verse 13 of the passage, "For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." Saul didn't follow the Lord's commandments to wait for Samuel to offer the sacrifice. And instead, he took on a role that wasn't his to take on. It wasn't his job. And you see, he not only demonstrated that he didn't have a heart for God, but Saul showed that he didn't have a heart for God's will to be carried out. He didn't have a desire to see God glorified by his actions. This is a trend that we can see from this point on in Saul's life, especially when it comes to times such as when God was being glorified by David's actions, and times when David was even being held in higher esteem, higher respect than Saul. And we see that through those times. For example, when the people were singing aloud, you know, "Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his tens of thousands." You see, Saul in that situation, he didn't want to see God glorified by David's actions. And because of that, he became bitter and he became jealous towards David. And that was something that he struggled with throughout the rest of, you know, his reign. And we often do the same thing today. We show that we don't have a heart for God and that we don't want God to be glorified by our actions. You know, we also don't listen and pursue God's will for our lives. For example, we do this with the jobs that we pursue, that we try to get. We want the jobs that we want. We don't want the jobs that God wants oftentimes. We also do this with our homes. We want the home that we want. We don't want the home that God wants us to have. You see, we all want the American dream, and we want our image to be portrayed as a certain level to everyone else around us. But what we really should seek is God's will for our lives. And we should be like David. We should be people that have a heart after God. Paul wrote in Philippians chapter 2, verse 19, "But I trust the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you shortly, that I also may be encouraged when I know your state. For I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state, for all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus. But you know his proven character, that as a son with his father, he served with me in the gospel." See, here Paul is writing about Timothy's character. He's writing concerning Timothy's character. And we can see through this passage that Paul thought it was utmost importance that we seek God's will for our lives, that we not seek our own will for our lives. And, you know, during that time, Paul said, "For I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state, for all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus." You see, Saul had trouble finding people that would seek God's will, not seek their own will, the things that they wanted, even. Well, he found that in Timothy, a person that was seeking God's will. And, you know, the principle is the same. We can apply to our lives that we need to seek God's will first. We don't need to seek our will. We need to seek God's will for our lives. And as I said, we should be known as people like David, people who are a man or woman after God's own heart, who seek God's will, who seek his heart, and draw closer to him. Do we fit in this category? Can we be known as people after God's own heart? Maybe you're in one of those situations like Saul was in, Maybe you're in the proverbial rock and a hard place in between that. I mean, you know, maybe you don't have an army of Philistines that are about to attack you, and you know, that's probably not the case for most of us. But nonetheless, you're in a tight spot. You're in between a rock and a hard place. See, but the challenge for you and for me is to live like there is a God, to not be foolish, as Saul was, and to act like God doesn't even exist, and act like he's not there to help us through our times of trouble. You see, Saul acted foolish in spite of all that God had done for them. But the challenge for you and for me is to also be obedient and to listen and to follow God's will. To follow his command, to seek out his will, and to conform to his ways as well. Do you and I live like that today in our lives? Do we seek out his will, conform to his ways? Would you pray with me tonight?